Please be seated. I received a letter from my former parish this week, or last week, that included some photographs and a note that I had written almost 8 years ago. The church secretary found the note while she was doing some reorganizing, which I guess could tell you something about her organizational skills, bless her heart. My last day in the office, she wasn't there. I had cleaned things out. I had checked this final to-do list, and I remember clearly just standing there alone at the church and realizing that as soon as I walked out that door, I would never return. It really was a precious moment. So I wrote a note to the secretary, the note that she sent me last week. I left some instructions for her regarding emails and a forwarding address and computer passwords, things like that. But I guess what struck me with the note was how I began. It said, "Dear Marilyn, I'm not going to say goodbye." And I didn't. I didn't do it. Goodbyes, I guess, have always been hard for me, and I, looking back, seem to avoid them at all costs. I think inherently men probably just aren't very good at goodbye, especially when there's any kind of emotion involved. I just, a couple of weeks ago, saw the last episode of MASH. Do you remember that? The episode that aired, and get ready for this, 30 years ago this past month. Yeah. The show was entitled Goodbye, Farewell, and Amen. And it still is the single most watched TV show of all time. And for those of you too young to remember it, which I don't think includes anybody here, the show was set in the Korean War, and it followed the exploits of the 4077th Mobile Army Hospital Unit. The show handled the horrors of war with humor and compassion, which I imagine helped to keep the unit sane. And it was through that common experience that they became a close-knit family and a community. And in the final episode, the community receives the news that the war has ended. They can all go home. And there is joyful celebration, but also sad goodbyes, as they begin to realize that saying goodbye means that their relationships, as they are now, are going to end. And the person that surprisingly struggles the most with it is B.J. Honeycutt. He simply cannot say the word goodbye. For him, it carries a heavy weight of finality. He knows that saying goodbye means that he will never see his best friend, Hawkeye Pierce, again. So he sort of pretends. He pretends that he and Hawkeye are going to keep in touch with Christmas cards and meet up at medical conventions and even visit each other's homes. I can relate to how he felt, can't you? We all can identify with his anxiety and his pain and his sadness and his reluctance to say that simple word. It is difficult. It's difficult saying goodbye to a friend or a mentor. And once that word is spoken, we have to learn how to live without that other in our daily midst. And I guess that's a long way of going about saying that that's the context of Maundy Thursday. This wonderful dinner in this upper room. It's Passover in the canonical Gospels, but the day before in John, and it really doesn't matter which day it was because, frankly, it's a goodbye dinner. And I imagine, in fact, I'm pretty sure that there was fear and anxiety that night, and also a great deal of sadness and a bewildering lack of understanding. And in the Gospel of John, this time together is called the last discourse, the final discourse. Only in the Gospel of John do we get this extraordinary section of wisdom and teaching that goes well beyond tonight's reading. And this truly is perhaps my favorite part of all the Gospels. We all know the basic story. Jesus tells his friends to remember him, to remember a king who was also a servant. He washed their feet. He took some bread and he blessed it, the same with a cup of wine. And he gave them a new commandment: love God and love each other, love your neighbor. And he asked them, "Do you know what I have done to you?" Have you ever really thought about what Jesus meant by that? I think the answer comes later on in the night, beyond this particular text, when Jesus says, "I do not call you servants any longer, but I call you friends. You did not choose me, but I chose you." Do you hear that? Can you possibly imagine how powerful those words must have been coming from their king, their Messiah? Try to, because those words are said to you and me as well. Being chosen and friendship, that's all important stuff. All of us, young and old and in between, have stories in our lives about being chosen or not. And some of the best and some of the worst moments of our lives have to do with being chosen. And that's what Jesus has done to us. It's about those wonderful, divine, unexplainable occasions of grace where God chooses to bring us together at a particular time and in a particular place into this thing that we call faith. The most unlikely cast of characters, with all our differences and our abilities and our disabilities and our quirkiness and our brokenness and our wholeness and our wisdom, doubt, joy, love, hope, sorrows. It's incredible if you think about it. But what's really important is to know what this word friendship is really all about. You see, our word friend really isn't a sufficient translation from the Greek. Perhaps a more accurate translation would be those who are loved. And in this idea of friendship, love is foundational. And it's a mutual love. It's a love where friends share themselves in such a way that the well-being of one depends on the fulfillment of the other. Friends who speak their mind to each other openly and honestly and fully. Friends who hold each other accountable. And friends who truly and deeply recognize their need for each other. In those ancient times, a rabbi's followers were considered much like servants. But in his goodbye, Jesus is changing that relationship. And that's huge. And that is our inheritance as disciples today. And while Jesus' words of assurance and promise may not lift the heavy burden, the heavy weight of finality that comes with a goodbye, those words do give hope. Because in those words are the glimmering promise of God's ever-redeeming presence. It's an intimacy where together we're privileged to enter into his presence, to speak with him in the most intimate terms about those things he wants us to do, and those things we'd like him to do. It's a relationship where we are allowed to say what's on our hearts, to share our joys and concerns, and know that he will listen and celebrate with us over those things that excite us and weep with us over those things that grieve us. And the kicker is, we're called to go and do likewise with each other. I do not call you servants any longer, but I call you friend. You did not choose me, but I chose you. May we all grow to know that, to believe that, to embrace that, and most importantly, to accept that. God love you. Amen.